The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Welcome to Critical Hit, a Major Spoilers Dungeons & Dragons podcast. So glad you could join us again this week. Last week, we were talking about Paragon Paths and how we were going to move through that and moving from Heroic Tier up to Paragon Path. Hopefully, that was some information that you guys enjoyed. In that time, it's given our adventurers some time to split and go further and further apart. And so let's get back into our Celestial Crusade with our Dungeon Master, Rodrigo.
That's me.
What's going on, Rodrigo?
Oh, man, it's been a hell of a week. Oh, in game.
It's probably been a hell of a week for those guys, too. Yeah.
Actually, it has. We are going to pick up on the Cirrus Warrior.
And that includes which people for...
That's Tork and Ket.
That's right.
Ah, so this is the
diplomatic envoy.
Mission, yes.
Envoy? Envoy.
Envoy.
We got us an envoy tricking through the night.
You guys are weird.
Hey. Made it to number one in 1972.
Hey. Yes.
C.W. McCall.
Anyway.
How many of us would actually know that?
The ones who are smart, Rob.
Obviously the ones who are alive.
All right. Moving along. Let's check in with these guys on the diplomatic envoy.
Yes. So... only a little over a day has gone by. Ket and Tork are called down to breakfast. And they had a pretty terrible night. Neither one of them got any sleep, and they both have, kind of these persistent dull headaches.
Your face is a persistent dull headache.
No, Rob, no. Your face is a persistent dull headache.
I will accept this.
I believe I shall have to quote the great philosopher Mrs. Garrett, who said, Girls, stop it!
You wanted to throw that one in last week, too.
I did. That was my last cultural reference.
No, it wasn't.
Until the next one.
This
is when it gets out of control when we record too early in the morning, and everyone's hungover, which is probably why Ket and Tork have a headache.
Yep. I chose not to drink last night. Thank you.
And I'm 40 years old, so, you know, I naturally wake up in the morning feeling hungover. Anyway, Ket has a dull headache.
So does Tork.
Tork is a dull headache. And now we're cha-cha. So we come down. What have we been called for, Rodrigo?
Breakfast.
Okay. I'm going to see if they can make a funnel cake.
They're probably already there.
Yep, they are. Sitting at the table are Klaus, if you'll remember Klaus, half-elf, wearing a bandana, little thin mustache.
Does he talk with an outrageous French accent?
He does not.
But he should. He looks like Gerard Depardieu.
Yeah, he's actually he might look like a very young Gerard Depardieu. These guys are all relatively young, except for one of them, who sitting across from is a guy who looks pretty old. He's that guy with the bushy eyebrows and bushy mustache and a big scar on his head. And then next to him is a relatively young human with kind of a flat top haircut. In front of each of them is a bowl with some beige gruel looking stuff. And there are two more spots, each one of them, with this kind of porridgey stuff.
I'm going to sit down and find a space that's big enough. Sit down and I'm going to try and eat the slurg there or something.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I'm here, aren't I?
Yeah, don't you start with that again.
What?
Yes, you're here.
I'm confused. I sit down and follow Torque's lead.
Okay. The guy with the flat top looks back and forth between you guys. Rough night last night?
Well, you know how sometimes you can't sleep, and then other times you can sleep?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was like the first time, except I couldn't sleep.
Oh, I see.
Something wrong or something.
Yeah, that's too bad.
All right. Excuse me. Got kind of a brain ache, too. It's like somebody, like, hit me in the head repeatedly with a club or something.
That sounds rough. The other half-elf on the ship, because there's three, one being Ket, comes out. He's wearing an apron and is carrying a big kind of kettle of this gruel and goes through and gives everybody seconds. Takes one look at Ket. Stifles a laugh. Keeps walking.
Well, you know him?
Don't think so.
Does he seem like he knew you or something?
Not sure. I'm just going to leave it alone for now. There's way too much to worry about without having to worry about more.
Alright. I just...
The old guy looks over behind as the guy walks off and yells out, "Hey, Cookie! You think you can make anything besides this gruel?" And it's like... It just sounds so loud to you guys. Mm. And he shouts, the cook shouts back, "I don't know, it's been pretty rough going getting this going. I don't think I can work this array very well," and takes a ladle and starts kind of pounding on it, making all this noise.
I got no idea what's going on this ship.
I'm going to finish up my bowl and head back to my bedroom.
Okay. Did you say that out loud?
No.
Okay.
That just does it. Yeah.
Okay, you finish up your bowl. Head back to your bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
On your way there, you find... the captain, who is on his way down, presumably also to eat.
Captain.
Master Ket. How'd you sleep?
Not well.
I see. What was the problem?
There's a lot going on right now.
Uh-huh.
Was it the ship that kept us up, or... Wait, I haven't.
You got no sleep, and now you have a big headache.
Okay. I'm just curious as to why I got no sleep.
I'm pretty sure that if you felt that the strains of things would have kept up, you would have told me instead of me telling you.
I'm confused again.
He's letting you know that the explanation for why you didn't sleep is in your hands. He said, hinting broadly.
Yeah, I know. I know what he's doing, but he's also doing something that he's told me not to do, which is telling me what I did. Because I don't see any reason, other than being a little stressed, I don't see any reason why Ket would have not slept at all. I only see maybe him losing some sleep and having a rough night.
Okay.
Well, playing devil's advocate, how often do you meet your goddess face-to-face?
That wasn't my goddess.
Right.
But, yeah. I'd already dealt with meeting my goddess for about 2 weeks now.
Right. So you're telling me that Ket...
I'm confused as to why I didn't get at least some sleep, why it would have stayed up the entire night.
Well, because you couldn't sleep.
You tried to sleep, but couldn't.
Right.
Once I figured out what my plan is, I would be out, which...
But you weren't.
Right.
You never have a night of insomnia?
No.
Bastard.
Well, does Ket ever have a night of insomnia?
No.
Apparently,
well,
yes.
He just had one.
Okay.
So it's doubly disconcerting.
Yeah. I've got a lot going on.
I see. Well, what are your plans for today?
More preparation.
I see. Well, pretty soon here we're going to be pulling up into Outpost Bronze to pick up your security detail. So you might want to get some rest before then.
Well, once I've got everything planned, I'll be resting perfectly fine.
That's good. Just make sure that your bed's pulled away from the wall.
Okay. Can do. Why?
Oh, because the locks send vibrations up through the ship, and if you're sleeping, touching a wall, or rather, if you're touching a wall and trying to sleep, it won't happen.
Huh.
I'm guessing your bed was up against the wall.
That might make sense. Thank you, Captain.
Sure. Did you talk to the crew?
I ate breakfast.
Mm-hmm. How did they seem?
Loud and obnoxious.
Hmm.
You know, as though I hadn't slept all night.
You know, these trips are long, and sometimes the crew needs something to entertain themselves, and watching people who don't have their sky legs is sort of fumble around the ship is one source of entertainment, so I hope you won't take it too personal.
Yeah. I'll go get some actual sleep and I should be fine.
Sounds fine. Goes down. What's Torque doing? Still eating?
Torque is leading the crew in a rousing battle song while standing on a table.
Okay.
We're not sure why.
As the captain walks down... He says, off the table, Mr. Torque.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hey, jump down. Sorry, I didn't realize there was a no table standing policy.
Well, we only have so many tables and so many things to build tables with.
All right, so don't break things. I knew that was a good rule. Yes. I like your ship, by the way.
Thank you. She's the best ship I've ever had.
I had a friend who said the same thing about his ship. It was a little smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But it could catch fire whenever he wanted it to. It was pretty cool. Can you do that with this one?
I suppose I could if I jammed a few things, but that would be disastrous.
Probably, it's true. We're flying through the stuff. What are we flying through again?
The astral sea.
Yeah, like that. I rode a boat across one of them once, and I got to tell you, I like this a lot better, but still, I didn't get much in the way of sleep last night.
Oh. There's some chuckling from the crew.
And everybody laughs when I say that, and I don't understand why.
Yes. If you pull your bed away from the wall, you should be able to get some sleep.
There's a bed?
Did you just sleep with your back against the wall?
That's pretty much what I always do. Orem told me to. He said that I can protect people better that way.
I see.
I can try the bed, I suppose.
If you lay down flat on the floor, or if you move your bed away from the wall, you should be okay.
Thank you. I can do that. How much longer before we meet the thing?
We'll be picking up your escorts here within the day.
I get an escort?
Yes.
Okay. I know I'm all used to being the escort, not actually, you know, being an escorter.
Period. Well, those are our orders. I am guessing that, from what I understand, although you are on your own for this mission, I think your employers want to keep an eye on you to a certain degree. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, both. They said this is a Dipperlinatomic mission, and we got to be all kind of, you know. I don't know. I figure somebody's going to need hitting somewhere along the time. So.
I find that's true most of the time.
My mom used to tell me there's always somebody needed hitting.
I suppose that's true, depending on where you go. In any case, you might want to finish up and get some actual sleep before we dock.
Alright. Thank you, Your Majesty.
That's not necessary. Captain will do.
Thank you, Captain Majesty. I'm gonna go lay down then. I'll try this bed thing.
Okay. Torque goes and gets some sleep. Ket goes and gets some sleep. And
those are some cool sailors, man.
you know.
At least we weren't throwing up over the railing.
It's, you know, that sort of thing where, like, you show up on your first day of classes, freshman year, and everybody picks on you, and then a year later you're a sophomore, so what else are you going to do except pick on freshmen, right?
That didn't happen to me because Steve was there.
Yeah, I deflected all of his.
Nice.
Yeah, see, they picked on him instead.
Actually, that didn't happen to me either, because my first year of college, I was in the arts dorm, and everybody was hippies there. So it was like, yeah, what can you do? It's like, I don't know, I can throw clay at people, I guess. Yay, express yourself. It was pretty great. Everybody was naked all the time. Anyway, Oh, hey, Mason.
Anybody else noticing an early morning focus issue?
Yeah, no, I can.
That critical hit, we teach him young.
Yep. So, eventually, there's a knock at each of your doors. And just a quick shout of, we'll be docking soon. Captain wants you on deck.
Sure.
Now you got some sleep. I mean, you know. Definitely a short rest type sleep.
Yeah, better than nothing.
Yep.
Alright, so I'm gonna go knock on Ket's door and see if he's up.
Okay. When you're about to knock on his door, the door opens and you almost knock Ket on the head.
I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't actually stop himself.
I do have reflexes. It's a question of whether I want to.
Yeah, that.
Hang on. Wait. I rolled a 15, so yes, I successfully keep myself from knocking Ket on the head. Hi.
Morning.
Yeah. You think it'd be unwise to find some kind of prank to play back on them guys who are laughing at you? I don't know. Because I figure when we're in the midst of a giant, hostile, empty nothing that's irritating the people who are driving us around is probably a good idea.
Let's keep that one on the back burner for a little while.
All right, just checking. Where's your little monkey friend?
Comes out of my whatever he was hiding in.
Yep.
Okay.
He also did not get much sleep. And spends a lot of time kind of biting his own shoulders because he's itchy when he doesn't get sleep.
Ew. That looks kind of painful.
Yep.
Probably.
Like, does he have a way to, like, write stuff down for us or remember stuff that we don't remember?
He could remember stuff that we don't remember.
That'd be kind of cool because... I don't know if you've noticed, but we're not the smart ones.
We are not the academics now.
No, so I'm hoping that, you know, maybe we can get some assistance. All right, we're gonna go up on the deck.
Okay.
You little guy, I want you to listen for stuff and see if you notice anything that we don't.
Does he even understand anything other than...
He understands.
Okay.
Whether he actually...
I'll turn and hiss at him. Any you attention.
Good? He scratches his head. I don't understand what he wants me to do.
Just nod your head.
He looks over at Torque, gives him a big fangly smile, and nods his head up and down.
Good work.
So you guys get to the go up on deck. The crew is hard at work, docking the ship, and once that is accomplished, they lower a ramp down for you guys to walk down. The captain comes with you.
Let's talk ships for a second.
Okay.
The Thony's ship, whose name escapes me, the beautiful...
The Proud Baroness.
Thank you. Was always described as kind of looking like a classical sailing ship, only not.
Right.
Is this like that, or are we looking at sort of a high wind kind of thing?
It really isn't. It's the ship is not... Like, it doesn't have that that belly, like that roundness that that an actual large sailing ship would have. It's mm-hmm. built a lot more like, it's a lot more like an enormous canoe. Think of like a Viking longship,
mm-hmm.
Except it's a lot more rectangular,
right?
And angular, and just in general, there's no figurehead, and it's the size of a kind of a small a single or two mast ship would be, except of course it has no mast. If they had shown a picture of this to Torque, absent of, or even to really any of you, absent the Astral Sea or a dock or anything else, you might not have identified it as a ship. You might have identified it as some really weird building. They are not, they are only ship-like in that, they come to a point in the front in a lot of ways.
Sort of a Vogon constructor ship.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's my last cultural reference.
Yeah. Until the next one.
Until the next one.
Right.
Cool.
He's,
all right.
He's on a tight cooldown. So you guys get down to the dock. This is, as the captain described it, Outpost Bronze. There's nothing particularly bronzy about it. It's just a bunch of buildings. It's an island of some sort. It seems fairly large, like it could support a small population. You're pretty sure that if you... No, it's not on the map. You find that... You would imagine that if you stood on the tallest building... somewhere around there. probably actually a little closer. If you stood on the tallest building in the outpost, you could probably see the edges of it in every direction, but... just see them, not necessarily, you know, spit into them. Because you shouldn't anyway. That's vandalism.
So, also, the wind probably is blowing in the direction I would want to spit.
Yes.
Opposite the direction I would want to spit.
As you walk out of the dock proper and deeper into town, you see a procession heading towards you. There are four humanoids who are from head to toe covered in black cloaks and robes with a and they're all wearing masks that right at the forehead have this semicircular array of black feathers. They are walking side by side, so there's two of them, then behind them two more. Then behind them are 12 humanoids wearing white robes, and they are not wearing masks, but they keep their head bowed down. In front of all of this, leading the procession is a dwarf. And next to him, a bald guy. And we'll let Brian go ahead and describe the dwarf.
All right, Albrecht, am I on? Okay. Oh, yes. This guy, he's a dwarf, has a white, generally silvery white beard and bald head, wearing ceremonial robes over what type of armor?
This probably chain.
Chain? Yeah. Okay. To these character sheets. Sure. wearing ceremonial robes over his chain armor. And he has... What exactly is... that? What is it called?
A Mordenkrad?
Mordenkrad, yeah. It's a big hammer?
It's an enormous hammer.
Big hammer, okay.
There are sledges, and then there's a Mordenkrad.
Okay.
For the person who feels like they should be able to atomize bone instead of just crack it.
And is this a different weapon from what we had before?
It is. You never got that back.
All right.
So this is probably a
for the
cranky
man
dwarf.
Who has everything, yes. And wants to pulverize it.
Yep. It is definitely cranky.
Yep. And next to him is
a human. He's average height, average build, early 20s. Bald head. Looks like there's some remnants of blood stains on his head and in a pattern that many may recognize of his deity, Bahamut.
Mm-hmm.
And he's clothed in we don't want to say mustard, but almost a golden, dark golden.
Like a saffron?
Yeah, colored robes, mm-hmm. Head to toe. He's got a prayer necklace in his, prayer beads in his hands. Very quiet. Shuffles along, quiet contemplation, yet you can tell there's raw energy just waiting to strike out.
Nice.
Like a cobra or something.
Please tell me that blood is from a different fight than the one that he last played.
Oh, no. I think he's got to leave it on.
That's disgusting.
He's got to leave it on all the time. It's got to come off naturally.
That's what, like months ago?
It's got to come off naturally. Maybe. Who knows?
I'm pretty sure he's been in a fight at least once since then, so there's at least some fresh blood. I'm sure.
His name is Seven Owls Wise. He's a monk.
Yep. So, as this procession approaches you, the dwarf halts it at a little bit of a distance from you. Yeah?
Is his deity obvious?
Yes.
Yes.
That's the name of the deity.
To you, definitely.
Yes. Mm-hmm. it's spelled letter O dash V dash O U S because it's a rapper.
Obvious God is obvious.
Yes.
Let's cut this turn.
He is obviously a
little dwarfs.
A priest. Alright. I understand this is partially my fault. He is obviously a priest of the Raven Queen.
Probably scratching the back of my neck, you know, that whole mark thing and stepping behind Torque.
Okay. As the dwarf walks towards you, two of his, and presumably the human as well, two of the attendants in white break formation and walk and fall into a new formation behind them. They are each carrying something. They are just kind of like small chests. And they fall into line behind them. And these are kind of goodwill things that you're supposed to give to the people heading up this mission.
Very well.
So, there you guys are. Which I'm guessing, kind of in a weird formation, is Torque, then Ket slightly behind them, then the captain a couple paces behind. So they're weirdly standing in line.
That's odd.
So you be the one heading this expedition?
Yeah, it'd be me. I'm a leader. My name is Halston Thorkelson. These are not my associates. Well, that's Ket. He's apparently afraid he is. And you are?
I be Albrecht Ghostbeard.
And I am 7 Owls Wise. And give a little bow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cool name.
Thank you.
I'll try to remember that, because sometimes I make things sound funny and then it doesn't come out right. Everybody calls me Torque. I presume you know why I've called y'all here today.
Yes.
All right. We got us a mission to do some diplomatic-er stuff and stuff, so...
Well, we have brought with us some tokens of goodwill. I hope it serves you well.
Yep. One of the attendants walks up to Torque and hands him a chest, and the other one walks up to Ket and hands him a chest.
Thank you.
They bow and then make their way back to their line.
I bow in return.
Can I open it?
Yeah.
I'm gonna open it.
Okay. In the chest, there are 3 boots. Wait, no. Hang on. There are some bracers. Ket gets the boots.
Bracers is good. I look like, at them. What do they look like?
Bracers in my chest.
Yeah, that would have been sad, wouldn't it?
He's like...
After all of that, yes, there are some cool bracers. They are made of steel, but they also have this black lacquered filigree on the edges, so where your wrist is and where your elbow is, basically. And they are enchanted.
I'm going to hold them up to the light and shake them and see if I can figure out what they do.
Okay, give me an Arcana check.
All right, hang on. Let me check my Arcana.
I can just see him holding them up and rattling them and putting them to his ear to see if he hears anything.
Maybe just touching them with his tongue.
tastes like a battery.
Take a little bite to see if it's real.
Yep.
My Arcana, is a 3.
Yeah, half level.
Half level plus his intelligence modifier.
Yep.
17.
Ah, that's not too bad. They are...
magical.
Yes, they are magical, and they are defensive in some way. I mean, you also have to consider Torque doesn't know a lot about this stuff, but he hangs out with the three of you, and previously a guy who actually grew magic items out of his face. So he's, as a layman, he still has plenty of experience with this.
Something magic-y. I bet they make me harder to hit or something. Like one of them field thingies. Thank you.
Can I give him a quick check over?
The bracers? Torque? Yep.
While he's doing that, I'm going to look at his boots.
I hadn't even opened it yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. While he's doing that, I'm going to open his chest. Hey, look, you got boots!
23.
Okay. Let me pull up the information on this.
These are magic-y boots, I can tell. says right here, Tony Lama.
Okay. These are strikebacks. You get a... When you wear them, you get a plus one item bonus to opportunity attacks, I believe, because... Well, actually, let me check. That they're actually that tier. Yep.
Hmm.
And they have a property as well, which is that... As an immediate reaction, use this power when an adjacent enemy hits you. Make a melee basic attack against that enemy. This is an encounter power, so you can use this once per encounter, which is huge for Torque. You can find this in the Adventurer's Vault, page 136.
I'm not sure I have the vault, so... Cool. I'm going to put them on.
Okay.
They are called Strikebacks.
Strikebacks.
Strikeback.
Alright, I'll take a look at the boots now, since, you know, it's open and everything.
Yep.
I have rolled a 14, and I believe that these are boots of flying.
25.
Okay, they are not boots of flying.
I didn't think so.
They are boots of striding.
It's close.
Yep. Let's see, boots of striding.
It lets you jump across things a bit.
Gain a plus one item bonus to speed when wearing light or no armor.
Score.
Yep. So, Ked has a look at them, and then immediately flops down on his butt and starts putting them on. Maybe not. Oh, okay.
Now, I'll actually wait and go inside so I can put my old boots somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Just throws them in the face of him. Here.
So you said that was Adventurer's Vault page who?
Page 136.
What are they called again?
Strike backs, all one word.
I was looking this up on the compendium so I could...
Compendium.
And they are the heroic tier strike backs, as well as the boots. They're the heroic version. Yeah.
The level 9.
Level 9 or level 10? Because here it says level 10 on the compendium.
That's the strike backs are level 10. Okay. The boots are level 9.
So a level 10 item. Uh-huh. You do not need to be level 10 to utilize.
No. You can use any item of any level.
So how does the leveling of the item actually work in 4th edition?
The only thing that the level reflects is when a character gets it. Obviously, levels or power or items of progressively higher levels are progressively more powerful.
Right.
So, you know, at first level, you get magic items of 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th level as a party. Mm-hmm. And so on and so forth, each level. So, for weapons and armor and, like, next slot items and things like that, the enhancement does jump up 1 point every 5 levels or so. But other than that, the level does not reflect in any way on the character. It's kind of a weird way of, like, meta tracking the magic items.
Cool.
Matthew, check your email.
Checking. 7, 8, 9. Says I may already be a winner.
Let me tell you about personal. A fascinating opportunity that you can have to invest in a growing company.
V1 Agra, C1 Alice.
I don't know who Dr. Nadendene is, but he's going to give me $200 million, and all I have to do is let him know how to get money out of my account. Ked right. invented that, by the way.
Yeah, in this world, Ked will run the first spam scheme.
He will invent the interwebs.
I'm not even trained in bluff.
You know, sometimes...
You're just a natural.
Yes. Which is actually true. Yeah, here's the great thing about Ket. Ket is not even trained in bluff, but when he needs to, he just summons some demonic power to help him.
Shut up.
In any case, there you guys are. You hear... Torque hears a clearing of throat behind him.
And I forgot to introduce the captain of our fine vessel.
steps forward. Hello, I am Captain Garkanche.
Seven Owls Wise, bow.
I should probably write this one down.
Probably.
Yeah. Crafty it's spell.
G-A-R.
Hold on, I have to write Captain first.
Okay.
Gar.
Yep. Space.
Con. K-O-N.
K-A-N.
A-N. Space.
No. Dash.
Dash.
C-H-E.
Capital or not?
Yes, capital.
Yes, because the capitals matter. His name in French means the waiter.
What's the name of this boat?
What?
Cirrus. C-I-R-R-U-S. Warrior. The captain motions for you to follow him and heads back towards the ship.
That includes the Seven Owls and Albrecht, too, or are we just
Albrecht
sitting there on the dock?
You just sit there on the dock and we wave.
Watching the tides roll in.
The Captain Gar has a very expressive right hand. When he turns around and motions, you know exactly who he's motioning to and how fast you should move.
Okay. Shuffle.
Yep.
He is a leader of men.
He kind of is. And he is, however, very skinny.
He's a leader of skinny men.
Yes. Well, he's a skinny leader of men. He can lead fat guys, too.
He's like
Gilligan. Just not as far.
Or as fast.
Yeah. So, you guys get back to the ship.
By the way, they won't tell you this, but make sure you're not sleeping right up against the wall.
Thank you.
That's some good advice.
Yep.
Because it's a boat.
I will be avoiding the dwarf as much as possible.
Okay.
Did their retinue come with them?
No.
Okay, just the two of them.
So, allow me to point out something very important.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did Rodrigo break the rule and split the party, he split another party.
That's right.
Just to compound. How dare you, sir?
You know, looked a little worried there for a moment, Rodrigo. your eyes kind of grew a bit when he said he broke the rule. What?
What did I do?
I thought he was going to go all explosivo on me.
The song, Rodrigo.
So yeah, what do I know anything about him?
You know that Ket is a person of interest to the Raven Queen. First and foremost. Both of you, Seven Owls Wise and Albrecht, you have been given your mission. Your mission is to make sure that these two don't die.
Do we regard them as morons? I mean, we've been told that that's part of the layman initiative.
Yeah. Well, that is up to you. Okay.
The layman initiative that's been ridiculously successful.
I would say that Seven Owls might.
That's entirely up to you.
He doesn't have a high intelligence.
Here's the thing.
Not.
You guys still have that thing I sent you from Bao Belbina?
Yeah.
Read that up. Read up on the Church of Bahamut and how what their worldview is. Okay. And then you can through that prism, you can figure out how you feel about them, I think would be optimal. All
right.
So Matthew and I should probably do that for the other two, since that's obviously what's going to be happening.
Probably, yes.
Okay.
You'll be happy to know I've already read that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good.
That's why Rodrigo said read up on it.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't hurt to reread it.
No.
As far as what you've been told about them, you've been actually told very little about them. You do know about the Layman Initiative. You know that they've had, in air quotes, high success. But
they've had some success.
Yes. But also, you specifically saw the devastation that they caused at the university.
Oh.
Saw
those guys.
Yes. you've put two and two together since then. So
this is totally not my fault.
You actually, you know, you make up your own mind as far as that goes. But as far as the mission goes, you're supposed to protect them. You're supposed to take a back seat during negotiations, but you're also supposed to offer any advice and insight that you have.
Very well.
So both of them are from Bahamut's retinue?
No.
Okay.
I'm from the Ghost Queen. We're up for the Graven Queen.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. It's her. Uh-huh. All right. Okay.
So, very quickly, after After the captain talks to the guy at the docks, he goes back on board, and pretty soon the ship is moving again. The captain will come find Ket.
Hello.
We are about equidistant right now from...
I should probably pull that list up, shouldn't I?
Probably. From the Demon Web and the Bulwark of Fangs. Where would you like to go? And Torque and Seven Owls and Albrecht can also be here if you want to be.
I'd say...
Yeah, let me go ahead and bring Torque in on this. I assume the captain came to my room to ask?
If you went straight down to your room, then yes. Otherwise, he probably was up. You know, if you guys were still up on deck, he would have found you there.
I'd say we need to go wherever we think it's going to be hardest first. Because if we got the hard sell out of the way, and it doesn't work, then we can go for what would probably be the simpler hit. Basically, you knock out the big guy first, and then you clean up his monkeys later.
Yeah. Right now, Asmodeus is the... Asmodeus is kind of the leader of them.
Yeah.
Evil dudes.
Because I'm leaning towards maybe trying to approach him first and see if we can't get a... just a full council meeting, much like we did with the Pentathlon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I want to do that. But
oh, I really, really don't want to do that, but if we can get all five at once...
If we can get him on board, it might be more easier to sway others.
Probably far from me.
However...
That's got potential, anyway.
Alright. Go ahead and gather the other two and I'll bounce the idea off of them.
Okay. Someone comes in, finds the other two, and brings them over to Ket's room.
Alright. So, when we... Torque, myself, and the other... and Randus and Orym proposed our plan to... I forgot her name. Arathis. When we were getting ready to propose the plan to Arathis, she gathered the other four. Bahamut, the Raven Queen, Corlan, and...
Melora?
Melora.
Astrid.
Her, too. And she did that all at once, so we were able to present it once. Asmodeus is the closest the Dark Council has to a leader. There's a possibility he may be able to draw on the same sort of a council, and we can do all five of them at once.
I don't think we want to do that with them, but I think that starting with Asmodeus is a good place to go.
Well, right now, if we're not going to do it, if we're going to do it one at a time, we'll be headed to the Bulwark of Fangs and talk to Tiamat first, because she is the closest. Unfortunately, the Gulag Magnificent is the furthest away from where we're at.
Hmm.
So, I figured, since you two are here to also
advise
away. I imagine you two have a little more knowledge on the religious aspect of what we were undertaking than I do.
Yes. I'll be clear on one thing. I'm here to make sure that you don't die.
Which one is less likely to get me killed?
On the other hand, there's an old saying, sometimes the shortest distance between two points is the shortest distance between two points.
My mama used to say
gong.
That.
Hey.
Well.
Master Ghostbeard?
What manner of sales pitch do you got prepared for each of these entities?
individually for Grumsh and Tiamat. Gesture at Torque. We're going to throw him at him.
I was not consulted on this plan.
Yes, you were. You're going to bust skulls until we win them over.
Oh, I can do that.
I definitely could see that having some sort of possibly favorable impact upon Grooms. I'm not sure so much that Tiamat would be as impressed with such a display.
Yeah.
I think we got something more along the lines of some sort of shiny proposition that you would be able to offer her. She'd be more favorable to that. I mean, do you got any idea of what you would do to sway Asmodeus if we were to go that route?
Oh, I was hoping to actually logic him into it. Make him understand that his realm is in just as much danger as the rest of the realms from the Cysts.
Yeah, but isn't
not a bad call if you feel that your argument is strong enough to
stand. I feel we have enough experience to make the argument strong enough.
Is your argument strong?
Yes.
Gong.
Well, as you have mentioned, he is more or less the he more or less is the biggest head in this group. So maybe if you do get to him, that will help sway the others, maybe.
I'd be kind of careful how we address it, though, because some of them, if you tell them, well, you're in danger too, they might take it as you insulting them and saying they can't take care of themselves. I'd be worried about, what's his name, getting all angry and trying to kill us if we said he might be in danger, thinking it's some sort of, like, you know how when you make a threat but you don't make a threat? And like that?
Mm-hmm.
The captain steps up. Mm-hmm. One other thing is that the quickest way to get to the Gulen Magnificent is very close to the Bulwark of Fangs.
Mm-hmm. Might as well stop off on the way, most likely.
Well, certainly. I would prefer, as the captain of this ship, to go to the closest point first. Mm. That just makes the most sense nautically.
Yes.
It's up to you, but what I'm getting at is that the closest, or getting to the Gulag Magnificent, will take us very close to the Bulwark of Fangs, which means Tiamat might know that we are passing her by to go talk to someone else.
Yep, and again, we might
that be seems like her. A bad plan. We'll head to Tiamat.
That is a good point.
Yes. The shortest distance.
And we need something to bribe her with.
I'd feel that I'd probably have the most sway with her.
Did you say that would probably have the most sway, or I?
That would.
That would, okay. Yeah. But I can work on that as we get there.
Very well.
So?
To the Bulwark.
Very well. He leaves the room. And within a minute, you do feel kind of a little shake to the ship as it changes direction a little bit and starts to pick up speed.
And what are you going to bribe her with?
Stuff.
I mean, if you can convince her that she would see some sort of long-term benefit from this venture.
Tiamat needs lots of stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily tangible stuff, but some manner of status, prestige could help.
Lands, wealth, opportunities.
I understand.
Wow. Which is why, you know, you let her know that's why we come to her first. You don't want to say.
Yeah.
you want to make it clear that she's the one we're trying to talk to her. You can outsmart her like that.
You may have a point, Torque. But I have... How long? Or the captain already left.
Yep.
He didn't say about how long, did he?
Mm-mm.
I have said earlier
some time to... I have some time to think on this.
Yes. However, you have some abstract time to think on this. So as a player, you don't have a lot of time to think on this.
Exactly.
True.
Are we at a
yep.
Point? All right. You have some time to think about this. For everyone else, they have a week to think about this. As we bring this episode to a close.
Sometimes that's enviable.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to dive into
yours
our
truly,
email
Donnie
questions.
Dollar.
Let's see. My name is Brett. I'm DMing for my friends. We're a group of four. I'm using Cthulhu from the H.P. Lovecraft books. I'm going way of the rules of the Astral Sea and have a question since this is my first D&D game I've played, let alone DM'd. What should I do if I get lost by giving the team a flying boat and an astral diamond to buy stuff with, yet it's only good for buying stuff in Greycog, the equivalent of the Exilarchy of Cogs, which only sells stuff for airboats, then sending them to a different plane that has an endless ocean and forest and Cthulhu's city under the ocean with the old ones, let's see, therefore giving them endless paths to take, even turning against the natural world. So finally, getting to the point, where would I try to go from there? Simply let them decide through the sandbox or start a new storyline? It's kind of a...
So... What he's saying is he's got this plan, and then afterwards, where to go from there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you would want to start a new storyline after that, and by that I don't know if he means like just scrap the game and start over. I mean, you could say, and now you guys win the universe, yay, and then start over.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get to a certain level of power for the players, you know, if they have managed to beat up Cthulhu or make a deal with him to be his horrendous avatars in the natural world, you do kind of have to give them a little bit more leeway. And what you can do is sit down and tell them, where do you guys want to take the game from here? Then once they tell you, you go back, make some notes, and then you either
ignore that and
yes, well, partially to you know. Obviously ignore that. If somebody's like, because you're bound to have one player who's like, I want an awesome sword. It's like, yeah, but where do you want the game to go? Awesome sword. So, you know, you factor that into your notes, but that's not much to go on. And then the other thing you have to be prepared is for the players to not actually know what they want, either at the session, or to tell you that they want something that they don't actually want. Yeah. Then you start running it, and they get upset. I mean, all this stuff can happen. It's happened to me multiple times. Yeah. So, I would say... pitch it back to the players and see what they want to do, and then just take the best of their ideas and craft a new storyline for them.
Okay. You had mentioned Awesome Sword. Here's one from Bill. Hey guys, great show as always. I played D&D back in high school, but Critical Hit has gotten me to find a group and start up again. The last time I played was back in the 90s, so needless to say, I was a little rusty. Listening to you guys and the way you explain what's going on helped me at least have a basic grasp of the new rules, so after only one night with a group, I found I was hurling spells with the rest of them. My question is the character builder, and this would be the online character builder.
Mm-hmm.
In my game, I acquired a plot item sword with a few unique properties. Unfortunately, I can't seem to find a way to make this in the builder. The only thing I can find is by adding up some type of shard that has the benefits or adding notes. Well, the shards are not what I'm looking for, and as for the notes, they don't even show up in the item card on my sheet. Do you guys know if this is possible to do this? Is it possible to create a specialty item?
No.
In the character builder?
Not right now, not in the new one, not in the old one. You are just going to have to write it down, make a little index card for yourself, and go from there.
You could do some basic updates in the old one.
Yeah, I mean...
You're talking about the downloadable one.
Yes.
Yeah, he's only using the online server one.
Yeah, I don't believe that they've implemented that kind of... Customization.
Now, if all you want is something that calculates the math for you, then you can go and add a weapon that has the same stats, because chances are you get a plus whatever enhancement bonus. It's, you know, if it's a sword, then you're going to get your plus 3 proficiency for it or whatever. So you can find something equivalent if all you wanted to do is calculate the math and then add the other stuff, you know, have the other stuff handy in a card.
Okay.
You know, when Randus powers up somebody's magic items, for example, he actually has a little card that he hands them.
Yeah,
a character
that he's drawn out that says like plus 2 or something on there.
Yep, a character that I play, a cleric, can also enchant other people's weapons. So, yep. So I also have, you know, write down a little card and hand it to them so that they have it in front of them and remember it.
Yeah, and I found that with Torque, what I've had to do is I use the little character buildery thing to build the basics. And then I have to actually export it to a sheet, which is basically the equivalent of a printed out sheet. So I have it do the math, and then I transition that onto a sheet where I can actually see what I'm doing.
Right.
Because the thing that calculates doesn't take into account how much homebrewing Rodrigo does. So
I do exactly zero homebrewing when it comes to the characters.
Yeah, and that's why the thing can't calculate any of my stats, right?
I'm pretty sure the thing you have is just faulty.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's my fault.
Graham Gibson, our last question this episode. Graham Gibson asks, hey, Critical Hit guys, from a role-playing standpoint, who was your favorite PC you ever created in D&D? Let's go around the room, starting with Rob.
Let's not start with Rob.
Let's start with Rodrigo.
That's probably also a bad plan.
Let's start with Matthew, because I think I know whose his is. Go ahead, Matthew.
Well, obviously mine is the same one. And this is one that dates back to when I was young enough not to know better and not to care. But the character that I played repeatedly over and over and over was, and I always joke about the 35th level paladin assassin with mage abilities and fire breath. It was actually kind of like that. A multi-class ninja mage, the legendary slash Marad, played this character for the better part of 20 years, and yes, nerded it up in the worst way possible. The single worst example of Mary Suing, overpowering, flat-out cheating and rule-breaking ever. Because I would take the character from game to game, from system to system, and I would translate it as best I could. And basically what it broke down to is, you know, all stats equal awesome.
Nice.
But it was fun to play all stats equal awesome. And there were a couple of rounds where, you know, we were at old school epic level psychosis. The story that I always remember is fighting Freddy Krueger and Rambo on the outskirts of hell, which was a city much like Newark. These were really, really goofy games, and they weren't necessarily dice related. They weren't necessarily even related to the mechanics of the game, but they were fun for themselves. And while I'm a little embarrassed by that character, it's the kind of embarrassment I get when I watch the movie Heavy Metal.
Uh-huh.
And every 40 seconds there's, you know, poorly drawn boobies floating around. I still understand the awesomeness of Heavy Metal. And, you know, my grown-up brain looks at the poorly drawn boobies and goes, wow. Yeah, there's some things here that I'm no longer as cool with, but it's still, to me, one of the greatest movies of all time, and that's still one of my favorite characters. For a long time in college, and I'm not ashamed of this, I actually went by my character name. My friend Carl, my roommate, introduced me to his parents, his uncle,
hey man, and this is Slash.
The Reverend at his wedding.
Hey, Rev,
this is my
this
friend
is Slash.
But, you know, I stopped doing that about the time I was 24 or 25, and while I'll still occasionally, you know, resurrect that character here or there on, you know, Wizardry 7 for the Nintendo, which, by the way, killer game, you know, it's something where sometimes you have to really nerd out into a character and completely disappear up your own ass to realize how to actually, you know, how to do a character that's not completely ridiculous Mary Sue.
Okay. Brian?
I would have to say, I guess in recent memory at least, my favorite character was probably Merrick, the halfling paladin of Tiamat.
That was a good one.
Just a little angry guy who basically, well, he came from a world where, for the most part, the halfling community of that world was more or less overran and just devastated by rampaging hordes. So
rampaging what?
Hordes. With a D.
Hordes. You need to enunciate, sir. Because that was very nearly the coolest round of all time.
Well, actually, you know, if you've ever been to an avian convention when the makeup runs out.
That's where the bird people come down, right?
Yeah,
the
exactly. Avian? Yeah. Yeah. Rob.
Oh, my God. I've got so many characters under my belt that I just love playing.
Pick your favorite.
I don't have a favorite.
Pick it now.
I have multiple personality disorder. I play a lot of characters.
Choose one to talk about.
We'll go with Arvid. Arvid was set up as just a joke. It was supposed to be set up for like a one-off campaign, and one of my roommates' he uses campaign setting for basically everything. He was running for some friends back home, and I went home with him for the weekend, so I was going to get to playing it for the one night. So I created a changeling warrior warshaper. Just so I could have all sorts of random stuff and grow whatever the crap I felt like at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
He became a complete jokester, and before the end of the night got trapped in a gem that got then thrown in a river. Come back, I lose my character in his campaign back home, and we're set about 100 years after the fact. And I'm like, well, can I just play him again? And Mason said, sure. So I got to play the jokester who had been trapped in a gem for 100 years.
Nice.
Basically just nonstop talking, nonstop wit, nonstop humor, who turned out to be a completely broken badass when we got jumped by a demon that should have been way too much for us to handle, and I took on one-on-one.
Yeah, Changeling Warshaper is pretty rough.
Rodrigo?
My favorite D&D character that I've played may be my very first D&D character, who was a Sorial Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a big Triceratops guy. And you can tell, if you're looking at this campaign, you can see why it's so weird if you consider that my very first D&D character was that guy from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But I deliberately, when I started, decided that he didn't speak common and couldn't actually interpret what the party was saying most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
There was only one character who could speak the same tongue as that he did, and he was a jerk. So they'd ask me what my name was, and I was like, well, you can't actually pronounce it in your humanoid tongues. And he's like, okay, well, we'll just call you Phil. And I was like, is Phil a good name for me to have? And he's like, oh, yeah, Phil is a warrior's name. Very well, you and your inferior monkey friends may call me Phil. And so he was Phil for a long time until another NPC filled me in on it. And then I chased the rogue with my giant hammer for, like, 15 rounds.
All right. Well, since this is my first real D&D game, I don't have any characters except for Aurum. But I will say, over on World of Warcraft, my first World of Warcraft character, and this is interesting, he was a...
I noticed you say he.
Yep, Night Elf, mm-hmm. Druid, mm-hmm. who also has the last name Rivendorn. So you guys can merge your worlds. We do know that Orm's mother and father have a brother and a sister somewhere, so we'll let you... tie those two worlds together. But I like playing Aurum, or not Aurum, I like playing Rivendorn because, just learning the mechanics and learning the role playing inside World of Warcraft. Ultimately, Rivendorn made it up to like level 42 or 43, and then I was more interested in playing somebody that was better than a druid.
Sure.
And left him naked on the beach somewhere.
Druids are awesome.
Yeah, so that was my
character. It's always funny until it happens to you.
Yes. All right. Over on the iTunes, people have been giving us some shout-outs, including Coach Trid. As long as you know what to expect, I haven't heard every show, but I love having the chance to listen in on the adventure, and the tips are great. Keep up the good work, guys. And Kevin Ryan says, I'm a post-grad student in Dublin, Ireland for the year, and this show has helped me keep in touch with my Greek roots. Geek Root. It's like, all right. These guys are hysterically funny. Be forewarned, you're going to start wishing your GM would run the games the way that Rodrigo does, and your friends would crack pop culture references as well as the Major Spoilers crew. But if you can deal with party envy, then this show is for you. Thank you so much, Kevin. Thank you so much, Coach. And if you'd like to leave a 5-star comment over at iTunes, maybe you just might get yours read on the show. Until next week, we will be back for Orym, Randus, Torque, Ket, Seven Owls Wise, and Albrecht. Here's hoping all of your dice rolls are critical hits.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.